fighting for freedom every day. Broadcasting from the heartland of America.
The next generation in conservative talk radio.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed it is. What's up? Welcome into it. Hey, happy middle of the week, man. It is a Wednesday, greatest day of the entire week. So great to have you along for the ride as we do every single day at this time. What's up? This is the Voice of Reason. I am Andy Hoosier. I'm still trying to just breathe from all the shenanigans going on today. What a day it's been for sure. First and foremost, it was kind of fun to watch the media get a little angry. CNN having a hard time saying a few words today. Coming to the acceptance, coming to the admittance that we may see a re-squaring up of 2020's election for 2024.
Officially project that Donald Trump has eclipsed the delegate threshold to officially clinch the Republican nomination for President of the United States. We can say that because CNN can project that the former president has won Washington State. That milestone puts the country on a path toward a 2020 rematch.
There it is. It's official as of last night. Super Tuesday 2.0, bringing in the enough delegates for Donald Trump to surpass the number that he needs to officially be the nominee. Now, he's not going to get finalized until the actual RNC convention and when we certify the delegates, but the delegate count as of right now sitting at 1,249 for Donald Trump, surpassing the needed 1,215. Nikki Haley coming in at 94 and others all collectively at 12 delegates. So Donald Trump very easily, very handily walking away with this one. We knew that was going to be the case. And now the question is, how does the Republican Party unite, rally around each other, and figure out a way to drive the voters out in November to vote for that Republican ticket? And the question still remains on who will be that vice presidential candidate for Donald Trump moving forward into the race as well, which I think will be a major factor on some that may be on the fence to support Donald Trump or not support Donald Trump. But he did release a statement last night via video and Truth Social about what his agenda looks like now that he is that presumptive nominee, officially, unofficially.
Victory because our country's in serious trouble. We have no respect on the world stage. Again, this was a great day of victory. Last week was something very special, Super Tuesday, but now we have to get back to work because we have the worst president in the history of our country. His name is Joe Biden.
I love it.
Oh! What Donald Trump really meant to say.
We get to start pulling that out more frequently now that Donald Trump's going to be back in the world of politics. So that's going to be fun, but as of last night, we did see, some of the latest numbers here. We had Washington, where Donald Trump won all 43 delegates there. Mississippi, he won all 40. Hawaii, he won all 13. Georgia, he won all 56. Nikki Haley not getting a single thing last night, even though she did drop out, obviously, so that doesn't help her at all. But upcoming, the next one will be on Friday, where we have the Northern Mariana Islands. That's interesting because that's not even an official state, but they do have 9 delegates coming up. Guam as well this weekend, and by next week on the 19th, Arizona, Florida, Illinois, Kansas, where I'm located here, and the state of Ohio, all coming up with their big delegates, and it should be an easy vote to know which direction those are going for the Republican side. So all eyes on now the general election, which is good. Now I advocate for state Republican parties and national Republican parties. Let's find a way to unite, find a way to win over more Republicans, and focus on beating the Democrats. Let's stop the infighting, because that's been tearing us apart pretty badly, especially at that federal level. All right, we got a lot to get to today. Barry Hinckley, he'll be joining us at the bottom of the hour. He is the founder of Redeclaration of Independence. Yeah. What does that actually mean? What is a redeclaration? And do we need a new declaration of independence against our federal government with the way that they are trying to, at least usurping powers? What would that new declaration look like and some of the grievances that we have against the federal government right now? I can think of a few personally, and I think that this is an interesting idea. So we'll chat with Barry coming up at the bottom of the hour. Speaking of kind of the virtue signaling, the selective rage that politicians have on both sides of the aisle, mind you. That leads us to one of the votes that happened earlier today, causing more of a stir in Washington, D.C.
What's trending today?
And I know if we focus a lot of time on this issue here on the program, but being a younger generation of talk show hosts like myself and trying to appeal to a younger crowd that I think is a very important one that we need to focus on, figure out a way to win them over and begin educating the younger generation, I think this is relatively important. The House of Representatives, first thing right out of the gate today, votes 352 to 65 with one just voting present on banning TikTok, the social media app. And the bill essentially says that either TikTok be sold from the company of ByteDance to a different company, primarily or at least selectively from one that would be here in the United States, or we ban it to where both the Apple Store and Google Play stores would not be servicing the app of TikTok any longer within the United States. The company of TikTok has come out and said that they were unaware of this bill until it was actually passing out of the committee going into the House floor earlier this week. And it said, absolutely no, they're not selling off the company and the social media site. So this one goes on to the Senate now, and the Senate more than likely will be passing this one as well, which makes President Joe Biden the one that will be signing this TikTok ban in the nation. And as I've said, I don't need to be re-beat a dead horse all over again, but I would like to reiterate that where is the bill that's going to stop the data collection of our own government? Our GPS, our text messages, our cell phones, our emails, our conversations, our social media content, our personal information, our sensitive information, all of the GPSs that they see with us driving to work to and from every single day, or the social media content that we have, or any other sensitive information that you and I may have. When is the government going to stop collecting that data? Until they pass that one, then every one of those that voted for this TikTok ban are slightly, just marginally, on the hypocritical side of issues, because we're concerned all about China, where that selective rage is geared towards. But our government is no better at the collection of data, especially with the ongoing weaponization of every alphabet soup agency at the federal level. So I understand the concern of China, but right now, this needs to be conversed on at a deeper level. According to Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, he did post a comment on the X or on the Tweety earlier today after the vote right out of the gate saying, quote, "Communist China is America's largest geopolitical foe and is using technology to actively undermine America's economy and security. Apps like TikTok allow the Chinese Communist Party to push harmful content to our youth and engage in malign activities such as harvesting the location." Now, okay, all the issues that they say are concerns, I want you to relate to and see and ask yourself the question, does our own federal government do the same thing? Ask these questions. It is harmful content for the Chinese Communist Party to our youth to engage in the malign activities such as harvesting the location, purchasing habits of consumers, collecting of contacts and other sensitive data of Americans. Every one of those checkbox, our own federal government does the same thing. Today's bipartisan vote to pass the Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary Controlled Applications Act demonstrates Congress's opposition to Communist China's attempt to spy and manipulate Americans and signal our resolve to deter our enemies. I urge the Senate to pass this bill and send it to the president so he can sign the bill into law. I don't know if it will pass the Senate, but my guess is it probably will. And it will probably relatively soon, in the next day or two, if not later on this evening, because right now, China is public enemy number one, according to our federal government. And I agree that China is a threat, but the collection of all this data that they just mentioned is being done on the home front just as badly. And I'm concerned that we're just giving them a pass. And we haven't had this conversation really until, I don't know, now. But we haven't had it since the metadata collection that we heard about during the Patriot Act in the early 2000s trying to stop terrorism. The reason this is such a big stickler for me, and the reason we've talked about it so much on the program, is obviously if we're going to win over the young generation, which the young generation has its own mass amount of issues, we'll read some of those later on in the program, but when they have a mass amount of issues with us not being able to reach them, there is a stigma about the Republican Party being the rich old white guy in the nation. And that's the reputation, that is the persona that is given about the Republican Party and the nation. We need to reach the younger generation about conservatism. We need to teach them about privacy and private property. We need to teach them about high taxes. We need to teach them about conservative values. We need to teach them about family values. We have to teach them about this stuff, and we have to give them the truthful information about what Washington, D.C. is doing, what Joe Biden and the administration is doing. We have to engage them, which means we have to go to their platforms they're using to engage them and win them over. It's kind of like the minority communities that never hear about Republican messages at all, because the Republican messages just fall on deaf ears, or we never even try to go in there to reach out and say, hey, have you tried voting Republican once? Because you voted Democrat for the last 80 years, and how well's that working out for you? We have to do that to the young generation as well. And right now we have to engage them in the platforms they're using. Instead, what do we have now? We have a bipartisan bill led predominantly by Republicans that's killing off the platforms that they're using more than anybody else. So how does that win in our favor to win them over? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So the TikTok ban moving forward, 352-65 with that vote. It is a bipartisan one with, I believe, 19 Republicans voting against that. The rest Democrats that were predominantly jumped on board with this with Republicans. And again, I question as well that if Democrats are jumping on board and supporting a bill from Republicans, then we should also be very skeptical about what that bill actually looks like, because I'm very concerned about Democrats supporting something in a bipartisan manner. That's not their flavor. That's not the way that they actually operate. It is a little concerning. There is another piece of legislation we need to be aware of.
What's trending today?
And this is not a bill being passed out of Congress, but I want to shift it back to immigration for just a moment, because there is now a very clear agenda of what Democrats are trying to do. And every day it seems like they just put a nail in their own coffin, because immigration seems to be one of the number one issues that we hear about constantly from both sides of the aisle as a priority of what we need to address, on one of the issues that we need to focus on. And the Biden administration continues to just shoot themselves in the foot over and over again, which is hilarious for us to watch politically, but it's a little bit dangerous of how we're actually handling this in reality at the southern border. And right now there is a group of attorney generals across the nation that are getting together a coalition to challenge a lawsuit that is going on right now at the federal level, allowing the federal government to back out of the little bit of enforcement that we're actually doing at the southern border. Here's what I mean. According to WIBW News, and this is specifically geared towards where I'm at here in the state of Kansas with our own Attorney General Chris Kobach, but it's a coalition of multiple different attorney generals that are trying to get in between an immigration lawsuit, two immigration lawsuits that are being pushed by immigration rights groups, meaning those that just want open border policies, including the ACLU. One of the bills, or one of the lawsuits, is the East Bay Sanctuary Covenant v. Biden and the state of Massachusetts versus Mayorkas. And the reason these are being pushed is because there is a push by these pro-immigration with open ends here with quotations for the radio listeners, that they're wanting open borders. They don't want anybody illegal. According to these left-wing progressive lawyers, nobody's illegal. Everybody's a dreamer. Everybody's just an undocumented dreamer in the United States. Nobody's illegal. That's the push that they're really trying to do. They're suing the Biden administration for the little bit of enforcement that we're already doing. Yeah, let me say that again, because that's a bit of a shocker. I know. There's not a lot of enforcement going on at the border already, but the little bit of enforcement that we are doing, there are the pro-immigration individuals and groups that are suing the federal government, suing Biden, and suing Mayorkas for even enforcing any type of immigration law. The problem is that the federal government, Alejandro Mayorkas, and Joe Biden's administration, the White House itself, the executive branch that's supposed to enforce laws, they're not even fighting the lawsuit. They're settling. They're going into settlement court to say, yeah, you're right. We shouldn't be enforcing these. Let's go ahead and settle. Meaning they're not even standing up and fighting them in court and saying, this is what federal law is. This is what we have to enforce because it's on the books. They're going into settlement court with these pro-rights immigration groups to allow them to start changing what these federal laws are.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed it is. Welcome back into the program. 24 minutes past the hour. So we have the Biden administration even easing up on the little bit of illegal immigration enforcement that we have on the books right now. And they're doing it by going into a court system, settling in court with the ACLU and other pro-illegal immigrant organizations, pro-immigration organizations like the ACLU, that are challenging the Biden administration for laws that we have on the books for even enforcing the 20% that they actually are trying to enforce in a very poor, haphazard manner, if you know what I mean. So the bill, or not even a bill, just the lawsuit, is trying to loosey-goosey the laws even more so. And instead of fighting it, like the federal government's supposed to do. They're just going into court, which you can put on the conspiratorial hat for just a moment, the tinfoil hat, and say, hey, by the way, well, this is maybe orchestrated that way, so that way we can even ease up on more of our immigration enforcement by not doing it on our own, but just being challenged on it in court. We go to settle. The settlement means that we just back off on this enforcement stuff, and then everything's all hunky-dory. There was a opinion piece released by these quote-unquote immigration experts coming out of the Ninth Circuit Court where they released an amicus review and brief on this one. And here's what they had to say. The rule, which is what they're challenging here, the rule, which came into effect in the immediate aftermath of Title 42's sunset and which applies to non-Mexican asylum seekers at the U.S.-Mexico border. Meaning, if you remember Title 42, the Remain in Mexico policy, that we actually screen people. We don't allow illegals to come in, and we screen them to make sure that they're healthy to allow to come into the nation. The rule, which came into effect immediately after Title 42 sunset, and which applies to non-Mexican asylum seekers at the U.S.-Mexico border, automatically forecloses a migrant asylum claim unless the person, quote, A1, arrives at an official port of entry or having secured an immigration appointment through a complex mobile phone application. A complex mobile phone application. It's very difficult for you to download that app and for you to schedule your time to come to a immigration port of entry. Can't be doing that. Number two, receives advance permission to travel to the U.S. Or three, comes to the U.S. after having applied for and been denied asylum in a transit country. Absent proof of one of these narrow exceptions, according to these immigration experts, I say that in air quotes again, immigration experts, absent proof of one of these narrow, difficult, challenging, racist exceptions, I threw those adjectives in there, or a medical or other emergency, non-Mexican asylum seekers will be unable to seek asylum regardless of whether they have compelling claims to relief. Now, that's the opinion that was given by the Ninth Circuit Court on these lawsuits on why we need to back off on this immigration. Unless you actually schedule the point of entry or you come in legally through the point of entry and find that and schedule an appointment, or you come to the border after being denied by being an asylum seeker, after you go through those narrow things, then you're not allowed technically to come in. That's what's on federal law right now. Here's what they have to say. The rule violates the important protections for migrants seeking asylum set forth by the INA by creating clear bars to asylum for most non-Mexican migrants, distinguishably labeled as, quote, rebuttable presumptions that directly conflict with the statutory requirements of this court's precedent. In other words, it's totally unenforceable and you can't do it, and it totally violates their human rights for you not allowing them just to walk across the border. And then when they get caught, be like, oh, I'm totally an asylum seeker. That's what's being challenged. The Biden administration is backing off on it and just settling and be like, yeah, you're right. We can't be enforcing this stuff. And now we have to create a group of attorney generals in the nation from the state to challenge the settlement that's going on and challenge the federal government to actually fight and enforce their own laws that are on the books. That's where we're at today, because the federal government's so inept that they can't even enforce their own laws. That's the craziness we have to deal with in today's times. They won't even enforce their own laws. They won't even stand up in court to defend their own laws because we're apparently violating some type of rights for someone to just be allowed to walk over and claim asylum if they get busted coming over when they're not supposed to come over. And we have to create a coalition of attorney generals to tell the federal government you have to actually defend your position in court. What a wild time to be alive.
The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. When Reason Meets Radio, this is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Darn right it is. Welcome back into it. Reason, Common Sense, Rationale. That's just what we do here on this program. It is getting more and more frustrating when we have to remind the federal government, hey, you got to kind of do your job that's on the books. You have laws that are on the books. If you don't like those laws, you can repeal the laws, but that takes Congress to do it. But you're the executive branch. You enforce the laws that's on the books. That's what your job is. And then backhanded, sleazy kind of way of doing it is saying, hey, okay, I'd say this again in air quotes, pro-immigration organization like the ACLU, you're going to sue us for enforcing laws that are on the books, and then we'll be like, yeah, okay, you're right. We won't even defend it. We'll just go to settlement, and that way you guys get some money, and then we'll just loosen up even the little bit of immigration that we're doing in the first place, and it'll totally all be cool. We got a whole plan out. And now we have this coalition of AGs from across the nation that are saying, wait a second, that's not okay. There are two cases, by the way, again. It's one of them, the East Bay Sanctuary Covenant v. Biden, and the state of, I believe, Massachusetts and Mayorkas. If I can, my computer's freezing. I don't know. But the two cases that are going on right now, and these quote-unquote legal experts from the 9th District Court are saying, oh, yeah, these laws that give this very narrow, stringent way for you to come to the border, a.k.a. download an app and schedule an appointment or come through a port of entry and just claim asylum from wherever you may be. Which, remember, United Nations global law means that if you're an asylum seeker, you just go to the next nation to you. You don't go all the way around the world and then claim asylum. But according to these immigration experts from the 9th Congressional or from the 9th Circuit District, they're like, yeah, totally violates human rights. You have to let them in. You can't just restrict them to this narrow way of immigration. Doesn't work that way. How ridiculous. What time do we live in when we just... And again, it's getting more difficult because we're running out of ideas to force the government to actually have to enforce their own laws when they don't allow us to enforce laws because apparently Texas isn't allowed to seal its own border. So we have to rely on them. And then they're like, yeah, sorry, we'll just not do as much of it. It's a wild time. Let's get into what's trending. What do you say?
What's trending today?
Obviously, this issue and so many more are so many reasons why we're just a bit frustrated, slightly frustrated with our federal government. What do we do about it? Well, there's a movement going on right now to essentially declare our grievances with the federal government and start changing things. Happy to have on the program, he's the founder of Redeclaration of Independence, which you can find online at redeclaration.org. Happy to have on here Barry Hinckley. Barry, how are you, my friend?
I'm great, Andy. It's good to be with you.
Yeah, great to have you in the show. I have to ask you, what in the world is the Redeclaration of Independence? What are we doing here?
Well, we're speaking truth to power, which I think our founders would be proud of us. I mean, it took us 250 years, but if you study history, sometimes it does take that long for people to realize that we better act before it gets too late. And our liberties are being stolen, we think, by a corrupt power base of elites in Washington, D.C., and this is our attempt as grassroots citizens to try to take some of that liberty back.
That is good. I know that people are getting more and more anxious, more and more frustrated. We'll see how the elections go this year, but right now we're also seeing to our own Merrick Garland, our attorney general at the federal level, suing states because we're trying to impose actual, I don't know, election laws, having voter ID laws and so on and so forth. So we're getting more and more frustrated with our federal government that doesn't seem to want to represent us in any way, are they?
Well, you just nailed it with Merrick Garland and the attack on the states. Keep in mind, this is a constant attack on our states. We have two countries within America, sadly. One is Washington, D.C., and that political empire with their outposts in L.A. and New York and San Francisco and Chicago. And then there's we the people. And they are constantly, and I mean they, the elites, the power elites, in the political elite in Washington, D.C., they are constantly trying to dilute states' rights and then vis-a-vis our rights. Because if they can dilute states' rights, they become all-powerful from Washington.
Yeah. When do you think this big shift happened? Obviously, it's always been a battle, even during the founders' times. You know, do we have too much federal government? Do we not have enough? We tried it with the Articles of Confederation. That didn't work the way that they necessarily wanted it to, so we had to create the Constitution now. But when did we take the major leap, or was it a slow trickle of let's centralize more power, let's look towards the federal government for more and more authority to quote-unquote do things or to solve issues or to take care of business? And when did we start seeing this shift of government, federal government especially, do something?
Well, the real students of history will tell you it happened beginning in the New Deal. And before the New Deal, two-thirds of tax receipts were state and local, and one-third was federal. After the New Deal, that flipped. And so then of course, we racked up a ton of debt with the New Deal, and then World War II, a real lot of debt. And then a real coup de grace, I think, on our liberty became when they enacted a temporary, in quotes, right, just like, you know, the income tax would only be for the 1%, a temporary confiscatory tax code when the federal government actually got your paycheck first, and they sent you what was left. That was just supposed to be temporary to pay for World War II. So much cash was rolling in. Then it became, Washington just became a big cash grab, and, you know, they've been eroding our liberties ever since with, the war on poverty and all, the Department of Education and all these multi-trillion dollar failures that have solved no problems but cost us trillions of dollars.
Yeah, yeah. Well, are we even in at all in constitutional compliance by creating essentially our fourth branch of government, all the alphabet soup agencies and departments? And then at the same time, we haven't even passed an actual legitimate federal budget since about the Bush administration. Barack Obama just said, well, we're just going to do an omnibus package, pass it to see what's in it mentality. So remarkably mentioned by Nancy Pelosi back in the day, that now this is the first year we've actually passed six of our appropriation bills, but we're already 6 months into our federal budget. Are we at all in any way still in compliance with how the Constitution was intended?
No, absolutely not. And the problem we have is, and we outline this, there's 10 demands or tenets in the Redeclaration of Independence. And this is an accountability project to try to hold our representatives accountable, so when they come to ask for their job back in 2 years or 6 years, whatever cycle they're on, that we have a measuring stick and say, did you do this? If not, we'll get someone who will. Basic things that I think most rank and file Americans will agree with. But, the real problem is we are way out of constitutional compliance, but with a 98% reelection rate and the ability to be there for life, we can't make changes to bring them in compliance. And that's what we're trying to do here with the Redeclaration of Independence is make these people accountable for a change.
I love it. Talk about some of these. You mentioned 10. Talk about some of these grievances, quote unquote, that we have in this redeclaration.
Simple things. I mean, you balance your family budget, don't you, Andy? Mm. Right? I mean, balance the books. Stop spending our children into the grave, right? Mm. A balanced budget amendment. Term limits, 12 years. And this is a really important one. I mean, this one is only one sentence long, but I'll read it to you. It says, to reestablish the principle of self-governance and rebuild the ties between the electorate and the office holder, and act and enforce term limits on Congress members and senators of 12 years or less. And that one's really important because we figured out that if you only give someone 12 years, they have to have another career.
Yeah.
But if you give them a lifetime, they'll stay there for a lifetime, Joe Biden. And we know that leads to corruption.
Yeah.
So you attract a personality type that is into public service versus self-service.
Sure. Well, it's very important indeed. I mean, you mentioned, trying to actually bring the elected official back to properly represent the people. I mean, do we need to talk about as well repealing, the 14th Amendment, where the senators are elected by the people, as opposed to being appointed by the state legislatures in your states? I mean, do we need to start going back to the way things were prior to some of these major changes?
Well, you've raised a really good point.
17th Amendment, I'm sorry, 17th.
We've got 10 tenants here, and we feel that, dealing with border security, dealing with the elections, for example, right? Because most people believe the elections have been corrupted. So we believe if we attract the personality type to represent us in Washington, that is into self-service, public service, not self-service,
yeah,
they will also be able to, once we deal with these pressing issues like the border and securing it, that we can drill down and start cleaning the thing up. Because I agree with you. When things are completely foobar, what do? You go back to the basics. And the Constitution is the basic operating system for this country. And it's very clean. It's very well written. And it has been the most enduring and successful form of governance in world history.
Yeah, amen to that. We're talking with Barry Hinckley. He's the founder of Redeclaration of Independence, which you can find all this information online at redeclaration.org. Let's talk real briefly about another organization with the Convention of States movement. They've tried to use that one under the Article 5, where essentially states can gather and pass federal legislation to impose some of these, to force them to pass a federal budget, to force them on some type of term limits. Is that a good way to go at this as well? And could they use a redeclaration as a way to rally their cry to try and put some restrictions on the federal government as well?
Well, I look at our two movements as bookends, and we are in a war. I'm not mincing words here. We are in a war for our republic. There are forces in Washington that want to turn us into France or England or some other, centrally based, control based, authoritarian, socialistic governance. We're in a war, so we are one battlefront, they are another. They should keep it up, and that is a great way to apply pressure through the states. They've got to get over the hump. And it's been slow going. Maybe they're flipping about one state a year now.
Yeah.
We're trying to get a grassroots movement of 25 million people to force the representatives to act. So the idea is you apply pressure in both places, right, via the reps and then via the states. So I think it's a great movement, and I think we need them both. And just like any war, you have to have multiple fronts to win.
Yeah, amen to that. I like that. Working on both fronts, and you guys working for the same goal, just in different ways. Barry, can you stick over another segment? We got to take a break here.
Sure.
Perfect. I want to continue this on again. You can find it. Redeclaration.org is the website. It's Barry Hinckley with the Redeclaration of Independence. When we come back, I want to talk about how we get this message out and how we start getting these elected officials to, I don't know, be held into, like, the Constitution. I know, a wild thought. We'll do some of that when we come back here to wrap up the program for the middle of the week. Will the elections change anything? The candidates in each party, what does that look like going into November, and how does this all tie in? We'll deal with that and more coming up for The Voice of Reason. Stay here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Darn right we are. Welcome back into it. Last few minutes of the program for a middle of the week. So great to have you. As always, you can find our website, HoosierReason.com, our social media handles at Hoosier Reason. Yes, even on TikTok. I know that may not be there for long, but until then, you can find me on TikTok as well. Yeah. TikTok bad, they're collecting our data, but yet we have the Patriot Act and we have all these other, I mean, Meta, come on, Facebook and Instagram, how much data are we collecting from there? YouTube, that's owned by Google that's censoring content, that's silencing and oppressing certain content, especially conservative content, and collecting every bit of your data. I reiterate, there was a study that was done a few years ago for my generation, being 35, being part of the millennials, that my generation, totally cool with the government accepting and collecting all of my email conversations and threads for a free pizza. I would give up all of my privacy with my email and content and the conversations I have for a free pizza. That's according to my generation, and that's where we're at with our understanding of the freedoms that we have in this nation, or should I say, lack thereof. We're hanging out with Barry Hinckley. He is with the founder of the Redeclaration of Independence. Redeclaration.org is the website that you want to go to and check all of this out. Barry, you've been working on this. You're getting up to 25 million signatures, which is amazing because we need to bring a major awareness. Theoretically, I want to go down this road, and let's say that we're able to implement all of this. What would our federal government look like if we could get back to the roots of what the Constitution was intended for? What would the world look like today?
Well, the federal government would be smaller and our kids would be smarter.
Yeah. Any of the fourth branch agencies, all the alphabet soups, I mean, those were never mentioned in the Constitution. Those would all be gone, essentially, wouldn't they?
Well, we don't need them, really. I mean, sure, you do need things that are, the Federal Aviation Administration and other things. I was a pilot for years, and you have to have coordination, for commerce and other things that are outlined by our founders. But, let's take the Department of Education, for example. Trillions of dollars down the drain. Education outcomes are worse.
Yeah.
We spend at the top of the industrialized nations and get bottom results. It's very obvious that it's not working. Washington, D.C., I mean, ask your listeners. I mean, I'm sure your phones will light up or your chat lines will light up. Ask them what the federal government does well, other than our military, which there is now under attack. And we've mentioned that in one of our tenets as well, is to end the attack on the meritocracy in our military. So Washington, D.C. is the problem. Eliminating, many or most of these three-letter agencies would be return us to our founders' foresight, which is, and you mentioned it in your intro to this segment, that people would trade their data for a pizza. That, humans haven't gotten any smarter. And that's exactly what our founding fathers warned us about. When people begin to trade their liberty for security, things get bad quickly, and that's kind of where we are.
Yeah, well, it really is. And I would say we're not only not getting smarter, we're probably getting dumber now with our texts that are now emojis. I mean, we're literally going back to the Neanderthal times of just putting pictures on the rock wall to try to explain what we're trying to express now. So that's the point that we're going back to, is hieroglyphics and emojis in 2024 in the new age, which is very insane. Donald Trump says that if he gets back into the office, he would demolish and abolish the Department of Education. Do you think that he's capable of doing that, or is it going to take some of these outside forces like yourself and the others to try and make that happen? Because he says that if he gets back in, that's what he wants to do.
Well, I was talking about that with a fellow patriot this afternoon, and, you know, Trump is one person, and the problems are so big and so deep and so systemic that he can't do it alone, and he's only got 4 years. And, you know, keep in mind, it took our founders 13 or 14 years to write, you know, ratify and then implement the Constitution. And that was when the government was a lot smaller. You know, it's going to take a lot of work, and it's going to take more than just Donald Trump. It's going to take supporters, and it's going to take representatives that are, you know, enforcing their actions, you know, from, you know, Kansas and other great states.
Yeah, absolutely. Barry, we got about 30 seconds left, but if people want to sign this redeclaration, where do they do it? Do they do it on the website?
Yeah, just go to redeclaration.org, sign it. I'll read it, sign it, forward it to 10 friends and family members, and make sure you sign it to your representative or the candidates you support and demand they do the same. Demand they agree to be held accountable for change.
I like it. Let's hold some accountability in the government. That's a wild term. How dare you say those two words in the same sentence, but that's what we're working on. Barry, congratulations, my friend. Keep up this great fight. Let's get another update from you again soon.
Thank you, Andy. Have a great day.
Hey, you as well. Good stuff. There it is, redeclaration.org. Go and sign the petition. Go and sign the Redeclaration of Independence. Do you want some accountability? Do you want to try and fight against the federal government? This is just another angle and another way to do it. Like you said, the war that's on multiple fronts, and this is one of those fronts. Do you want to be part of that movement? Great stuff. Appreciate it very much. We're back at it again tomorrow. We'll take the latest out of Washington, D.C. We'll see what shenanigans are in surprise for us tomorrow. Until then, be your own voice of reason. Be that catalyst for change. This is the Voice of Reason. I'm Andy Hoosier. We'll see you on the radio.